It's a quiet morning in Dobbs Ferry, New York, 1984. The thoroughfares are lined with modest homes, the kind where kiddies ride bikes freely and neighbors know each other by name. In one of these houses, a baby is born who will grow to reshape the way the world connects. That baby is Mark Elliott Zuckerberg. He's the first child of Karen, a psychiatrist, and Edward Zuckerberg, a dentist. From a veritably morning, there's commodity different about him, though no one could have guessed the scale of his future. Mark is a curious child. Indeed, before he can form full rulings, he exhibits an unusual alertness. He watches the world with sharp eyes, tracking patterns, responses, and the subtle meter of mortal commerce. By the age of 5, he can read and write, but more importantly, he begins to notice systems, how effects work, how they can be altered, and how he might ameliorate them. His parents encourage literacy, setting up a nurturing terrain that combines discipline and freedom. Karen's logical mind and Edward's perfection leave an imprint, shaping Mark's understanding of problem, working, and mortal jest. By the time he reaches ABC Darien Academy, Mark's seductiveness with technology emerges. He's charmed by computers, not as a toy but as a world to explore. The family owns a Commodore VIC-20, one of the first particular computers, and it becomes his playground. Mark doesn't just play games. He begins to tinker with them, learning the rudimentary coding languages of the time. His parents notice that his attention doesn't waver. Hours pass as he trials, troubleshooting crimes and creating simple programs that most children wouldn't imagine. It's at Ardsley High School, a small public academy hard, that Mark's gift truly begins to solidify. Preceptor Snapley notices aptitude in mathematics and wisdom, but more striking is his creativity. He is unhappy with simply working problems. He wants to construct new bones. By 7th grade, he's formally erecting small operations to help him and his musketeers, not out of obligation, but out of sheer curiosity and exhilaration creation. During these constructive times, Mark is also learning the craft of mortal commerce. He's bright, yes, but socially, he's kindly reticent. Musketeers describe him as thoughtful, sometimes awkward, but always intensively concentrated on whatever captures his attention. He's the kind of sprat who can spend an entire autumn remedying a program without realizing the world outside exists. But he also shows flashes of leadership, a quiet, compelling capability to rally peers when a challenge sparks his interest. This combination of intellect, curiosity, and a rising social wit lays a foundation for the unborn entrepreneur. At home, technology is a constant presence. Edward Zuckerberg notices his son's growing aptitude and starts tutoring the basics of programming further formally. By the age of 12, Mark isn't just familiar with computers. He's fluent. He creates a messaging program called ZuckNet, allowing computers in his father's dental office to communicate. It's a simple network, but for Mark, it's transformative. He begins to understand the eventuality of connecting people through technology, indeed if only within the walls of a small office. More importantly, he experiences the satisfaction of erecting commodity functional, useful, and elegant, a feeling that will become addicting. School life continues, and so does Mark's absorption in the digital world. He discovers programming languages like Drive and C, exploring the sense and structure behind software. He begins to challenge himself with decreasingly complex systems, occasionally writing simple games or tools to automate tasks. At times, he faces frustration, as all originators do, but he treats crimes not as failure, but as information, an assignment he carries into majority. Mark's scrapbooks, filled with sketches of programs and notes on ideas, come a testament to a mind constantly at work, indeed when it appears idle to outlanders. Outside the computer lab, Mark's knowledge is also shaped by literature and history. His parents encourage him to read extensively, from classical novels to scientific textbooks, exposing him to a variety of disciplines. Karen, with her background in psychiatry, emphasizes empathy and understanding mortal jest, while Edward demonstrates perfection, regular allowing, and the significance of practice. These influences are subtle but important, shaping not just Mark's specialized chops but his worldview. He learns that technology isn't just about law or machines. It's about people and the systems they inhabit. By the late 1990s, Mark is a teenager with a character as a sensation among his peers and instructors. in High Academy. He continues to push boundaries. He trials with website design, game development, and early forms of social networking within small online communities. One notable design is a music recommendation program that allows druggies to partake playlists, a precursor in spirit to the social platforms he'll latterly produce. Indeed, at this age, he exhibits traits that will define him as an adult: grim curiosity, a desire for effectiveness, and a quiet determination to produce systems at gauge. Socially, Mark remains concentrated on his intellectual hobbies, occasionally at the expenditure of casual teenage life. Yet, he forms close gemütlichkeit with, like, inclined peers, relating over programming, mathematics, and problem working. These gemütlichkeit are constructive, offering both collaboration and competition. They educate him concession, cooperation, and the significance of participative vision, chops that will prove essential when he steps onto the global stage times laterally. At home and in the community, Mark's character as a youthful inventor grows. Preceptors encourage him to enter competitions, occasionally with limited success, but each experience teaches him adaptability. At the same time, he's acutely apprehensive of the broader environment of technology. He reads about the internet smash and the arising digital geography, realizing that the world is on the cusp of metamorphosis. Though he's still a teenager, Mark senses that his curiosity and chops could cross with larger societal shifts, a consummation that will guide his choices in the coming times. By the end of this first phase of his life, Mark Zuckerberg has formally erected a foundation that many teenagers retain. He's intellectually blessed, technologically fluent, socially perceptive, and fiercely curious. He has tasted the joy of creation, the satisfaction of working problems, and the challenge of erecting commodity useful. The world of Dobbs Ferry has nurtured him, but he's beginning to look outward, toward the larger stage where his ideas could reverberate. The seeds of what will come Facebook and the global impact that follows are still taking root in a small home office, on a gleam of a CRT examiner, in the mind of a boy who simply wanted to understand the world. By the time Mark Zuckerberg reaches High Academy, the quiet curiosity that defined his early nonage has grown into commodity more deliberate and focused. He's no longer just tinkering for fun, he's experimenting with technology as a medium for creation and influence. Ardsley High School gives him a structured terrain, yet it frequently feels restrictive to a mind that operates at the pace of law and sense rather than diurnal academy routines. Mark's nonage is marked by an adding mindfulness of both his capacities and the possibilities that technology offers. He dives deeper into programming languages, learning C, C, and Java, and begins to explore the incipient world of the internet. It is enough to write programs that run. Mark wants to make systems that connect people, tools that gauge beyond his immediate terrain. He snappily learns that programming is as important about armature as it's about sense, an assignment that will bolster every future bid. Among his foremost creations during these times is a music recommendation software called Synapse Media Player. Unlike typical programs, Synapse uses artificial intelligence ways to learn the stoner's preferences. It predicts the songs a listener would enjoy, conforming suggestions grounded on their jest. Remarkably, it draws attention outside his High Academy bubble. Tech titans like Microsoft and AOL notice the complication of the program, indeed offering him externships and meetings while he's still in his teens. For a youthful Mark, the recognition is exhilarating, yet he remains intensively tone-driven rather than fame-seeking. He's motivated not by accolades, but by the exhilaration of seeing a system he designed actually work and learn. At the same time, Mark's social life is nuanced. While he's frequently reserved and academically concentrated, he forms meaningful connections with peers who partake his intellectual curiosity. Together, they debate algorithms, unite on systems, and push each other's boundaries. Yet Mark also experiences the typical awkwardness of nonage. His social relations are occasionally uneven, marked by a mind contending ahead of conversational morals. But indeed, then, patterns crop. He observes actions, analyzes social networks, and begins to inwardly understand how people connect, a prelude to his unborn trials. Family remains a central influence. Karen and Edward continue to nurture his bents while resting him in ethics and responsibility. Conversations at the regale table move seamlessly from the counter-accusations of technology to mortal jest, the gospel of literacy, and the ethics of invention. These exchanges factory subtle seeds and Marx mine the idea that technology isn't just a tool, but a force that can shape society. He begins to internalize the responsibility that comes with skill, indeed if it's abstract at this stage. It's during these high academy times that Marx begins to conceptualize the power of social networks. He observes how his classmates communicate, partake information, and form connections. While this might feel ordinary to a grown-up, for Marx it becomes a pattern to crack a network of people linked by interests, actions, and participated gestures that could potentially be counterplotted, anatomized, and enhanced through software. This is ain't yet Facebook. It's a thesis, an internal model that will laterally transfigure into a platform that redefines global social commerce. Marx's fidelity to his craft is extraordinary. Late nights are spent in his bedroom turned laboratory, writing law on early PCs and experimenting with networking tools. He teaches himself HTML and other web languages, erecting early websites for small systems, occasionally for musketeers, occasionally for sheer trial. He learns the value of replication, that a first interpretation is no way perfect, that excrescences are data, and that perseverance can turn small successes into larger systems. Despite his absorption in technology, Marx doesn't ignore the world outdoors. He reads extensively, from wisdom fabrication to classic literature, absorbing assignments about society, power, and mortal provocation. Books like Ender's Game enkindle his imagination, while textbooks on ethics and gospel edge is allowing about the counter-accusations of invention. He begins to suppose critically about how systems, whether social, political, or technological, can impact mortal jest. By the time he approaches the end of High Academy, Marx's systems gain complication and recognition. His synapse program demonstrates that he can combine specialized skill with prophetic algorithms, creating software that responds stoutly to stoner jest. He also trials with online communities, understanding beforehand the ways in which digital networks can grease communication and collaboration. While still a teenager, Marx is formally exploring generalities that herald the armature of social media platforms. This period also shapes Marx's internal drive. He's not happy with small achievements. He wants to push boundaries. He develops a gospel of work embedded in curiosity, effectiveness, and trial. Success is measured not by external blessing, but by whether an idea can serve in the real world. He learns the exhilaration of problem, working under constraints, the joy of seeing law restate into palpable results, and the satisfaction of creating systems at gauge. As scale approaches, Marx's focus shifts toward advanced education, and Harvard emerges as the egregious coming step. He's accepted into university, joining the class of 2006, a corner that represents not just academic achievement, but a doorway to broader openings. Yet, indeed, as he prepares to leave Dobbs Ferry, the assignments and systems of his youth remain central to grim curiosity, an early understanding of networks, and a drive to make systems that can connect people. In these constructive times, Marx has formally established patterns that would define his majority violent focus, specialized mastery, a seductiveness with systems, and a recognition that technology can amplify mortal jest. Teenager though he is, the foundations for what will come Facebook are still taking shape in his mind. The small trials, the insomniac nights rendering, the gemütlichkeit formed around participated intellectual hobbies each contribute to the emergence of a visionary who sees the world not only as it's but as it could be. By the end of High Academy, Mark Zuckerberg is no longer just a sensation. He's an inventor in staying. The world beyond Dobbs Ferry beckons, offering lesser challenges and possibilities. And as he packs his bags for Harvard, he carries with him not just handbooks and laptops, but a vision, a curiosity, and the unyielding drive to make systems that can change the way people connect, a vision that will soon erupt into the digital revolution we know moment. The time is 2002. Mark Zuckerberg, now 18, arrives at Harvard University with a pack full of handbooks, a laptop, and a mind bulging with ideas. Cambridge is a world piecemeal from Dobbs Ferry. Cobblestone thoroughfares, centuries-old slip-up structures, and a bustling pupil population give the print a tradition and history. But for Mark, it represents a playground for invention. Harvard is elite, competitive, and intellectually rigorous. Yet he's undeterred this is exactly the terrain that will challenge him to grow. From the veritably first days, Mark stands out academically. He excels painlessly in computer wisdom and psychology courses, a combination that will latterly prove pivotal in understanding both technology and the people who use it. Socially, he's more reticent, frequently keeping to a small circle of musketeers who partake his interests. He's perceptive, quick with observation, and still ambitious. For Mark, Harvard isn't just a place for literacy. It's a laboratory for trial, collaboration, and vision, structure. Beforehand in his beginner time, Mark begins exploring the social structure of the lot itself. He notices the fractured way scholars connect, communicate, and share information. Clubs, dormitories, and social events all serve in insulation, and Mark begins to conceptualize a way to bridge these gaps digitally. He writes small programs and websites that allow scholars to interact in new ways. His approach is regular launch with a simple idea, test it, learn from it, and reiterate fleetly. This gospel, honed since his early programming trials in Dobbs Ferry, will come to design for his unborn work. One of Mark's first significant systems at Harvard is Course Match, a program that allows scholars to see which courses their peers are taking and which professors are most popular. It's simple in conception but elegant in prosecution, giving scholars a tool to navigate lot life more efficiently. Course Match earns him recognition among peers and professors likewise. While it may feel like a small achievement, the design demonstrates Mark's growing understanding of networks, both mortal and digital, and how software can impact jest. But it's FaceMash in 2003 that signals the first real spark of rebellion and audacity. Mark, fascinated by the social dynamics of attractiveness and lot life, creates a website that allows Harvard scholars to compare prints of their classmates. Using images sourced from pupil directories, the point invites druggies to rate which pupil they find more seductive. FaceMash spreads like campfire across lot, attracting thousands of callers in just as many days. The design is controversial, to say the least, and it lands Mark in trouble with the university. Directors charge him of violating sequestration and using prints without authorization. But contestation is a deterrence, it's evidence. Mark realizes the power of digital networks, the intensity of mortal engagement, and the sheer haste with which information can circulate online. FaceMash also brings Mark into contact with others who play critical places in his trip. He meets scholars and programmers who fate his gift, and he begins to understand the significance of collaboration, mentorship, and indeed the occasional challenge from rivals. The incident teaches him precious assignments about ethics, threat, and the consequences of pushing boundaries assignments he'll carry into the creation of Facebook. In the dorm apartment of Harvard, Mark's ideas begin to take shape more seriously. Conversations with musketeers and peers revolve around the eventuality of online communities, social commerce, and how to gauge digital networks beyond a single lot. By observing mortal jest who connects with whom, how people form reports, and what motivates engagement, Mark begins sketching internal models that will latterly come to armature Facebook. It's no longer just rendering for curiosity. It's rendering with vision. During this time, Mark also confronts the challenges of balancing ambition and particular growth. Harvard is competitive, social, and intellectually demanding. He juggles coursework, late-night rendering sessions, and the social dynamics of university life. Sleep is frequently offered, refections occasionally skipped, but every challenge reinforces his focus and adaptability. He begins to understand that invention requires continuity, attention to detail, and the capability to navigate both specialized and mortal complications contemporaneously. By late 2003 and early 2004, the ideas that had coddled for times in Mark's mind, from Zucknet to Synapse to FaceMash, coalesce into a singular vision, a social network that connects people originally confined to a specific community, but with the eventuality to expand far beyond. The conception is simple but important, a platform where scholars can produce biographies, share information, and interact in real time. The route is laid, but prosecution will bear both specialized skill and strategic thinking. Mark enlists a small platoon of trusted musketeers and collaborators. Among them is Eduardo Saverin, a fellow Harvard pupil with business wit, who'll give the original support and investment. Together, they begin erecting the first interpretation of Facebook in early 2004. The design is violent, with Mark rendering lifelessly, occasionally for days without pause. Dorm apartments come war apartments. White boards are filled with plates, garçon racks in the background, and the vision of a connected world starts to materialize, line by line, function by function. By the spring of 2004, the Facebook launch is originally just for Harvard scholars. The response is immediate and inviting. Within weeks, thousands of scholars have registered, biographies multiply, and the social fabric of the lot begins to shift. Mark observes patterns of engagement, tweaks features, and optimizes functionality. What began as a bold trial in dorm apartments is now a performing social network, evidence that the idea resonates deeply with mortal jest. Occasion one closes then with Mark Zuckerberg standing at the threshold of commodity far larger than himself. He's no longer the curious boy of Dobbs Ferry, nor the ambitious teenager High Academy. He's a visionary on the cusp of a revolution, equipped with specialized mastery and understanding of mortal networks, and an unvarying drive to make commodity that could reshape society. The stage is set, the players assembled, and the law ready to change the world.